Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, celebrating 30 years as local hearing healthcare professionals. With a practice featuring 5 doctors of audiology, including 2 who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient. They believe those personal partnerships are how people embrace hearing technology and keep hearing the most important sounds of their lives. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We'll bring you some of the most powerful stories of 2020, including how some people have long-term problems from catching COVID.
Because my brain just can't physically, I can only function brain-wise for like an hour and a half long. Good today?
The pandemic touches all of us. Plus, find out what it's like to be a contact tracer in McLean County, and domestic violence takes a disturbing turn in Bloomington Normal. That and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin says he believes the issue of direct pandemic relief aid for states, cities, and small units of government will come back. It was not in the $900 billion package Congress just approved. Durbin says the Biden camp has a different position than the Trump administration.
The difficulty, if we don't, is that these units of government will have to lay off firefighters, policemen, healthcare workers, teachers. That's exactly the wrong thing at this moment in history.
Republicans have argued direct state aid is a bailout for blue states with pension problems. Durbin says the aid would be limited to damages caused by the pandemic and not to fix pension issues. McLean County has announced 75 new confirmed coronavirus cases. County Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight says the rate of new cases has slowed in recent weeks. The number of active cases in the county, 1,055, is the lowest in over a month. But COVID is still straining hospital capacity. 17% of hospital beds in Bloomington Normal are available, and 12% of ICU beds. The county's COVID death toll remains 85. The state reports 2 COVID-related deaths in Livingston County, a male in his 40s and a male in his 70s. The city of Bloomington will get $175,000 from a new state program that supports affordable housing. The Illinois Housing Development Authority has awarded $10 million to nearly 70 communities through the Strong Communities Program. It aims to help local governments rehab vacant and blighted properties. The state also awards grants to the city of Peoria, Peoria County, and Dwight in Livingston County. The state plans to issue $30 million in all. Looking past the pandemic, online education may remain common. Some students excel at remote learning, others not so much. Unit 5 Superintendent Kristen Weichel says she thinks there are some takeaways from the situation teachers and students have embraced.
So I think it's going to cause all schools, not only Unit 5, to kind of take a step back and see like, okay, what are things that have worked well for some kids, and what do we want to continue to offer and implement in the future?
Michael says, for example, students who are out for surgery may be logging on instead of missing out. She says remote classrooms may also be useful to offer blended courses at the high school level or advanced courses for both high schools that wouldn't have had enough enrollment when offered at individual high schools. The Children's Discovery Museum is pairing up with 12 Illinois and Indiana museums for a Noon Year's Eve dance party. For 15 years, Bloomington Normal kids have gathered to count down during the day on New Year's. It looks a little different this year. Executive Director of Cultural Arts Beth Wisman says usually children's museums just do their own thing, but
there are just a lot of small museums that don't have the capacity for staff or revenue right now to provide their families with our annual tradition.
The live stream will come out of Decatur, Illinois, where a children's music group will perform. Don't be surprised if you start seeing Rivian vehicles and even founder and CEO RJ Scaringe popping up more often around Bloomington Normal. Scaringe is now based at the Rivian plant in Normal through production. He was previously based in Southern California, where Rivian has offices. Also appearing in the community more often are Rivian's electric vehicles. A green R1T truck was spotted last weekend parked outside the foundry, home to Greentop Grocery. Scaringe is overseeing the start of production in Normal. The company already has 630 employees there, with plans to hire hundreds more. The first vehicles will be delivered to customers starting in June. The town of Normal's credit rating held at AAA status in the latest Fitch Ratings review. The agency's rating applies to all of the town's $81.4 million in bond debt. Normal Finance Director Andrew Hune says it's an indicator the town is on good financial footing despite the challenges of the pandemic. The rating is based on cash reserves, budget flexibility, conservative spending, and economic development efforts. The level of debt in the town was a campaign issue in the close mayoral race 4 years ago, and is likely to be so again. Normal first hit AAA status in 2010. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. With a practice featuring five doctors, including two who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient. They believe those personal partnerships are how people embrace hearing technology and keep hearing the most important sounds of their lives. More information at bnaudiology.com.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's Public Media. The pandemic has affected every aspect of life in Central Illinois. As part of WGLT's look back over the year 2020, today we're sharing some of the significant stories of the year. A Leroy family has pushed back against the narrative that young people don't have much to worry about with COVID-19. 20-year-old Sarah Wielander was healthy, vibrant, a college student before she contracted the coronavirus. Now, Sarah is suffering from a stutter likely caused by a mini-stroke related to the virus. WGLT's Dana Vollmer talked to Sarah and her mother, Patty Wielander, about how it unfolded.
She had many of the COVID symptoms. She had really severe joint and muscle pain, headache, maybe sore throat at that time for a day, and fatigue, nausea, vomiting, and a fever. And so I took her in to be screened for COVID, and she actually tested negative. But she was being followed by the pandemic team at OSF because she had so many of the COVID symptoms, and they asked that she quarantine, which we did. A couple days into that, she was getting worse. And so they suggested she be screened for influenza, and she did test positive for influenza A. And so for a few weeks, we maybe attributed some of her symptoms to that, but she didn't seem to be getting better at all. And in fact, made a few trips to the emergency room, one time because the pain in her muscles and joints were so severe, and another time because she felt like her chest was squeezing. And then she started having problems with her speech, where she wasn't able to say what words she wanted. And she was hospitalized, had images done, and they can't really prove or disprove whether she had a stroke, but she has now some neuro deficits from the, which the doctors feel are probably from COVID.
The neurologist I saw when I was in the hospital told me we probably won't really ever know what happened.
How difficult has this been for you to go through?
It's been pretty stressful, mostly because we don't really know how long it's gonna last. And it's really hard academically because I am in college and I'm starting to get behind in my work, because my brain just can't physically, I can only function brain-wise for like an hour and a half on a good day before I need to just lay down. Luckily, my teachers are pretty understanding of this situation, and are really just wanting me to get better.
It's been fairly frustrating not having answers or not being able to access medical care when she's needed it. I feel like at times she hasn't been taken seriously because of her age. It's also been hard because we've had to leave her unable to communicate because of the COVID situation. So like the times my husband has taken her to the ER, a few of the times he hasn't been able to accompany her to make sure that we understand what's going on with her as well. And it's just, it's really hard to watch your kid not have anything that you can do that can help.
Your family has taken COVID seriously. You're wearing your masks always. You're only leaving the house when you have to. And this still happened to Sarah. What does that say
right.
to people that aren't taking it as seriously, especially young people like Sarah who may feel like they're invincible?
I think part of the issue, and I'm not blaming people for giving it to me, but I feel like part of the issue is when I have to go somewhere like school or to the doctor's office, the people that are there might have been not taking it seriously. And that puts the other people at risk at the places that they are. So I feel like it's just really hard because I can't control what other people are doing. And it's kind of frustrating because I've been doing everything I can to keep people safe. Because I thought it's not going to do anything to me because I'm so young, but it might do something to like my parents or something. I feel like I just want more young people or even people who think that they are healthy because they don't have any pre-existing conditions, that it still is dangerous for them. Especially because we don't know what it does to your body long in the long run.
You know, I've seen postings on Facebook where people say this is a political thing, that we've made COVID, and we have to some extent made COVID political. I think it frustrates me that everyone doesn't mask and everyone doesn't take it seriously. And I guess I would just encourage people to do that because, you know, you may be cavalier about your own health, but it's, you're affecting the people around you as well. And the statistics may be that only 2 or 3% of the people die, but we aren't looking at what happens to people long-term like Sarah, who, you know, may have a lifetime of disability because she contracted an illness.
That's Patty Wielander and daughter Sarah of Leroy. They spoke with WGLT's Dana Vollmer. Patty says Sarah now has significant short-term memory and cognitive issues. She does not even remember the interview. Some frontline workers in this coronavirus pandemic are people you never see. You may hear from them. Health experts say contact tracers are crucial to containing the spread of COVID-19, but only if the public cooperates. Eric Stock reports contact tracers get public feedback that sometimes gets personal and sometimes political.
After Ava Roper of Bloomington got her public health degree from the University of Illinois in May, she wanted to put it to good use. She saw the McLean County Health Department needed contact tracers, those who get information from those who have tested positive for the coronavirus so they can call those who may have come in contact with them so they can get tested in quarantine. Roper joined the staff with more than a dozen others and had to learn on the fly.
I would say it's been hectic because we kind of just all started. We were all kind of thrown into this. I mean, one of the things about COVID is that, you know, we're still learning. Everyone's still learning. The CDC is still learning.
Roper now trains new contact tracers. So does Gaynette Hoskins of Bloomington. Hoskins now handles case investigations. Those calls are more probing because they need more detailed information.
You have to be a little bit more in their, like, in their business. Who were you around? Think back on this day. Like, what was going on? Do you remember if you went outside? Was this someone in the store with you.
Many people don't want to give their personal information over the phone to a stranger. Linnell Greenberg of Normal works in the health department's communicable disease clinic. Since COVID, she's become a full-time contact tracer. Greenberg says she's learned it helps if you can quickly connect with that stranger to build trust.
Either as a mom or someone who works full-time, or someone who lives in this community who might have used their services in the past, I try and break that wall down very quickly so that I can get them talking with me and understanding that we're here to serve them.
Sometimes even that doesn't work. They often hang up or give out wrong information because they don't want the health department bothering them, or they have financial concerns. Stacy Hirsch of Tawanda is a health department nurse who has been doing contact tracing for a year and a half. Hirsch says sometimes the resistance comes from business owners who are afraid they may have to take workers off the job or temporarily close because of a potential COVID exposure.
If they're forthcoming, they'll give us all those contact people. It's just their employers not wanting to necessarily have their staff forced to quarantine. That could be the issue. So we get a lot of slack, and we have a lot of people who aren't very happy with us.
Gaynette Hoskins says there's another segment of the population that may not be forthcoming. She says she has to reassure immigrants their personal information won't somehow be used to deport them.
Because they are concerned, like, what does this mean moving forward, things to that nature. And I just want to know, like, I honestly just want you all to be safe.
Some of the pushback contact tracers get is from COVID skeptics. Linnell Greenberg says she never gets anywhere with them.
We see this as a medical issue and as a community issue, but unfortunately politics, because of the election year, has really entered into this. And so I have had pushback where someone will flat out tell me that this is a hoax. They're not taking my call and they think it's a joke.
Melissa Graven oversees the contact tracing program for the McLean County Health Department. She says compliance has gotten worse since the pandemic began.
There is a portion of the community that has an inherent distrust in government. So that's why allaying those fears and building a quick connection is such a valid and important skill to have as a contact tracer.
That can be tough to do when people get verbally abusive. Stacy Hirsch has fielded those calls too. She says she tries to not take it personally.
I try not to when I'm on the phone with them. I maintain professionalism, but after the phone call, I've cried many, many times, and I'm not ashamed to say it.
No. Yeah, it is difficult work.
It is.
The job has become more difficult because a sharp rise in new cases in recent months created a backlog before the health department hired more contact tracers. Hirsch says it's been overwhelming.
I would be not ever leaving my desk. I felt like I was like trapped to my computer and to my phone, and I wasn't taking lunches. I wasn't taking breaks. I just was on the phone from the time I got here until the time I left.
Hirsch says because of the backlog, the department has had to prioritize cases involving nursing homes and schools. Others can be delayed for days. The health department has said if you test positive, don't wait for a call from the health department. Start your quarantine immediately. And you can't test your way out of quarantine. Ava Roper says that's the most common misconception she hears from the public.
If you test negative, that you are good to go and that your exposure is not going to lead to a positive result. We always want to emphasize to them that they still need to quarantine for 14 days, because even if they have a negative result on day 5, on day 8, they could still become positive.
Despite the hostility and avoidance they encounter when trying to do their job, contact tracers say they know they are making a difference. Linnell Greenberg says the coronavirus is especially hard for older people who have to isolate. She's made multiple follow-up calls to a woman who is stuck in quarantine at home and can't see her husband, who is in the hospital with COVID.
Making a connection with someone who is really isolated and an older member of our community, and she knows that someone cares, that's my paycheck. That's it right there.
Greenberg says she's concerned more people act as though life has returned to normal. Cases like this remind us it hasn't. I'm Eric Stock.
During the pandemic, those on the front lines of domestic violence in Bloomington Normal say they have seen an alarming increase in not just the number of incidents, but also the severity. Ryan Denham continues our look back at the significant stories of 2020.
The numbers are stark. From March to July of 2019, about 215 new domestic violence cases were filed in McLean County Court. During that same time this year, it's more than tripled. Here's Mary Cole, the McLean County prosecutor who handles felony domestic violence in the state's attorney's office.
My caseload is really stacked with very serious cases right now in a way that it hasn't been since I came to McLean County several years ago.
Cole has seen an increase in severe cases like broken bones, lacerations, brain injuries. She's also seen more strangulations. That's a particularly dangerous type of domestic violence because some believe it's a significant predictor for future lethal violence. There have also been more reports coming in from Bloomington Normal Hospitals. That's according to Sena Ajabang, Director of Countering Domestic Violence.
So we might have 5 incidents, but it felt like 10 because of just the severity of it. And that's when you get really nervous because people can die or be very severe. And if we have an increase in reporting from the hospital, right, then you know that people, although there's a pandemic, they didn't have a choice but go to the hospital because of the severity of their abuse.
Domestic violence holds an unusual status in the criminal justice system in that it's so common that it doesn't attract much public or media attention when it happens. For the Bloomington Police Department, domestic reports are the most frequent call for service that officers respond to.
It's up substantially.
That's Jeff Engel, one of 2 Bloomington police detectives assigned to domestic violence cases. His department responded to about 679 domestic-related calls for service between April and July of this year. That's up 28% from a year ago.
That doesn't appear like it's going to slow down anytime soon, and I'm going to assume it's just because of the COVID and everybody's around each other a lot more than normally be.
Well, it's hard to draw a straight line between the pandemic and any individual act of domestic violence. Advocates and those in law enforcement say there's some correlation. COVID has amplified many of life's stressors, such as job or income loss, the inability to pay rent or utilities, and it's layered on new ones, like being stuck at home together more often or without childcare because the schools are closed. More people are self-medicating with alcohol or drugs, and together that's a recipe for an increase in domestic violence. Prosecutor Mary Cole says, like the rest of us, offenders are feeling a loss of control over their own lives right now.
I think that leads offenders to be more likely to try to regain that feeling of power and control by dominating their intimate partners and their children and abusing them.
Sena Ajabang with Countering Domestic Violence says some offenders have deliberately weaponized the pandemic.
The dynamic of an offender is to find vulnerabilities. And if you don't have any, you don't feel like you have anywhere to go, or you don't have a job at that time, you're laid off, they will capitalize on that. Nobody's going to help you. There's nothing out there, so you need to stay here.
Cole says some victims are more isolated than ever.
If they're working from home, you know, they don't have their safety net of their coworkers and even their HR people who can help them get hooked up with resources or church, etc.
She says another troubling COVID-related trend is that there are more repeat offenders while they're out on bond. She says offenders with limited housing options are more likely to return to their victim's residence, which would typically be a violation of the terms of their bond.
We are seeing people violating that no contact order over and over. So it's not uncommon right now to have someone who has a pending domestic battery case and then 2 or 3 pending violation of bail bond cases for violating that no contact order, and then a lot of violation of order of protection cases as well.
Sena Ajabang with Countering Domestic Violence praised judges and courthouse staff for staying accessible to grant orders of protection throughout the pandemic. One change that's made it slightly easier to obtain emergency orders of protection is that victims can now file the paperwork electronically and then appear in front of a judge by phone. That's according to Will Scanlon, trial court administrator for the 11th Judicial Circuit. That includes McLean County.
We had been trending around 650 orders of protection annually. I suspect we'll be up 10 or 20% and maybe more.
Those who commit domestic violence often end up in court-ordered treatment in programs such as Chestnut Health System's Invitation to Responsibility, or ITR. Carrie Anderson is Chestnut's Associate Director of Outpatient Services. She says treatment comes later in the process, so they're only now starting to see an uptick in clients.
I don't think we've yet had somebody say, well, it's the pandemic's fault that I did this, but it is fairly common for folks, especially at the beginning of the process, to blame other people or other situations for why they're in the situation they've gotten arrested or whatever it may be. And so that is definitely something we address always in treatment, is what can they control? And it's their own behaviors that they can control.
Bloomington Police Detective Jeff Engel says offenders tend to blame their substance abuse problem.
It is definitely a problem. It's a disease that needs to be taken care of. But in my mind, there's nothing that you can say or do that's going to make it right. And so it's your actions, and you knew what you're doing. It's just, you need to learn.
Everyone interviewed for this story stressed that help is available if you're experiencing domestic violence. It's not shut down. The Countering Domestic Violence 24/7 hotline is 309-827-7070. I'm Ryan Denham.
Tomorrow on Sound Ideas, hear more of the landmark stories of 2020. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. You can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories at WGLT.org. You can subscribe to Sound Ideas on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or NPR One. We want to know what you think of Sound Ideas. Comment on our Facebook page, we're WGLT-FM, or follow us on Twitter, we're all at WGLT News. This is WGLT, Bloomington Normal's public media.